Hello, listeners. Before we start this episode, I just want to say this is the time of year we remind you about how you can support this podcast by becoming a member of The Incomparable. You can sign up for a monthly or annual pledge to support this podcast directly. Here's what you do. Go to theincomparable.com/members and sign up. You'll then be asked to pick the shows on the network you would like to support. If you just check the box for Defocused, your entire contribution will come to us after a few fees are taken out. If you listen to other podcasts on The Incomparable Network, and I recommend that you do, you can also check their boxes, and your contribution will be shared equally by all the shows you want to support. As a thank you for supporting us, members receive extras including exclusive bonus audio, a live bootleg feed of The Incomparable, and a members-only Slack group. Since this is pledge season, this month many of the shows on the network will be posting bonus episodes just for members. This month, Dan and I will be talking to Scott McNulty of Random Trek on the network about the movie Lost in Space, which is not a very good movie, but I feel like we will have a very fun conversation. There are contribution levels at $5, $10, and $20 per month, and annual equivalents are available as well. And if you're already a member, it's easy to increase your pledge to a higher level and get some extra goodies in return. If you'd like to support us, go to theincomparable.com/members and sign up. Thanks. They let you down.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm all right.
Okay. Just all right?
I got a haircut. Looks weird.
Oh.
I mean, it doesn't look weird. It's just, it's a dramatic change, so my head is very tall.
Yeah. Wait, how did it do that?
Well, it was very wide with long hair.
Uh-huh.
And they cut most of the sides off.
Uh-huh.
And then now it's tall.
Oh. So,
it's
like a racer head?
Or what I'm saying. No, not quite a racer head, no. I look like a Jonas Brother or something. What's a boy band that's still doing things?
Oh, God, I don't even know. Are there any?
Are the One Directions? No, they broke up, didn't they?
No, yeah, because the Zayn guy, he did the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess the era of the boy band is over.
Yeah, but that's okay, because it makes room for jazz.
Jazz and musicals, bringing it back.
Yeah.
You had an early day off work today, and you decided to spend it by going to the movies.
I did. I'll be perfectly honest. I didn't really want to see La La Land.
Was this the only thing showing within 20 minutes of when you were near a theater?
No, I'm talking about months ago. I didn't.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah.
You waited until after it won 5 Oscars, 6 Oscars?
It depends on how you count and when you counted. I don't know. I was just like, whatever. Like, I'll see it when it comes out on home video. Like, I'm not in a rush. And,
How you said home video, preparing everyone for how old you're about to sound.
I know, yeah. I was going to catch it on VHS tape from my local Blockbuster or Hollywood Video. But
as long as they're not all rented, because it's a very popular movie. You got to get there before the crowd.
It'd be so popular. And because it just came out, it would be a two-day rental, Dan. You got to make sure you get it back. It's an increased charge, and it's even more expensive if it's late.
I don't even remember how many days you've got normal rentals. Were normal rentals 3 days?
I think they were like 3 to 5. I mean, it depended. I think they changed throughout the years, but the important part was that you basically had to almost immediately turn around and watch whatever it was that you got out that was an initial release, because they would buy a limited stock of them. It would almost always be out. But
I mean, it's not too different than renting something on iTunes.
Yes, except
you gotta
it's
give
not
it back after 24 hours.
Yeah, it's not a limited stock. They just decide not to send it to you when you buy it. But anyway, I had decided that I would just wait, that I was in no rush, and that I would enjoy this musical later. I had made the same decision about a number of other things that were nominated for stuff. Like, I saw Moonlight on my TV. Ooh. anyway, it doesn't matter.
You're Joe, what's all the fuss about, Steel?
Yeah, well, no, it's just that I'm busy. So... if you're gonna give me a movie about the golden age of Hollywood that at least romanticizes the golden age of Hollywood in a modern day setting, then I can give it a min.
You're gonna rush back to your car and live with the LA traffic as you hustle out of your Hollywood job to try and go watch an optimistic Hollywood movie.
No, and see, that's probably part of the reason why I didn't do that, because I hadn't rehearsed for the dance number that would be on that particular freeway. No, but see, here's the thing. I'm getting to this. I was wrong to wait because I like the film. I don't love all things about the film, but there are things that I really do love. There are certain songs and musical numbers and moments in the production that are nice.
Well, I feel like it's worth expanding on that. So are you comparing this to other movies? Or are you comparing this to other musicals? Can you separate the two? Or like where does it land in terms of just musicals for you?
I'm also not a huge fan of musicals. So I can't really, my rating of that would make no sense to anyone.
Okay, fair enough. If you're not a fan of music, that's fine. I would say the same thing. I don't watch many musicals and I don't like most musicals.
I mean, the musical that I like the most is The Book of Mormon, but that's not a movie. Nobody's turned it into a movie yet. I don't know why they haven't, but it hasn't materialized into that. I will say that I still like a lot of the aspects of this film. I don't love the entire package of this film. I feel like there's a lot of emotional baggage of art students that appears throughout, but
it's a very emotional movie, and I was wondering how that was going to square with you, because you're not known historically to be the most emotional human being.
Yeah. Well,
I'm trying to put that in a nice way.
I have emotions. It's just that my emotions are very fickle when you get down to the pretentiousness of like, oh, but I got to do the thing I love. You're not living your life the way you wanted to on your own. There are limits to the depths that I will go to with my emotions.
They're your emotions and you don't need to share them with anybody.
No, I can feel however I want to feel. So having said all of that, I feel like this movie is mostly good. And I do believe that it deserves certain amounts of the acclaim that it received, like the Oscar that it won for Best Motion Picture Score and Best Original Song. Great. Good stuff. That's fine. Cinematography? No. Hard stop.
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, you know, it was interesting cinematography. They made some interesting choices. It was, had some of the fun glamour stuff, kind of noirish looking things. But, it loses at least half its credibility for the fact that a lot of it was out of focus for me, which I've complained a lot about in other places, and I'm not going to stop complaining about because it was out of focus.
Yes. see, people might think that our podcast would mean that we would like that, but quite the contrary.
No, we don't.
I like all the techno crane stuff and the, you know, how they choreographed the movements in the camera to move through the space while they weaved through all of the stuff. I like the way that they had lights going up and down, animating around to fill the whole world and make you feel immersed in it. I don't want to see a matte box in a movie that wins for cinematography. I don't want to see any crap on the edges of the screen. I don't want to see shots that are either out of focus or using a lens which is not clear. Because there are some parts where I'm just like, I can't tell if this is as sharp as this lens gets or what is happening, but it is weird. Because there were some where it was definitely like the focus plane was completely off. You were just like, why are we focusing on the car door with the guy?
It's a great shot of Ryan Gosling's hair. It'd be nice if his eyes were in focus.
Yeah. So, yes, I don't agree on the cinematography award that it received. I do agree on the music, and I know a lot of people were rooting for Lin-Manuel Miranda because of Hamilton, and so that there were some people who were outraged that he didn't win for Moana, and I was just like, I saw Moana. It was a good movie. The songs are fine. These songs are better than those other songs. I'm very sorry. I know you like Hamilton, but these aren't the Hamilton awards. This is for, you know, the Oscars. So for Moana. So please just pull it together. Please. Some people were just so angry about La La Land winning things, and I was just like, calm down. And also, just because it won this thing doesn't mean the other thing isn't a good movie. It's not how that works. We don't dispose of all copies of Moana now. It still exists. You're welcome.
Joe says you're welcome for not destroying.
That was also a reference to the to one of the songs, Dan. Sure. The skies, totally. The sun. Anyway, now...
So you've basically been listening to the soundtrack constantly since like 2 p.m. or whenever you got out of the movie, right?
Yes. I keep letting it go to the jazz stuff. And, you know, it starts out with a lot of the musical numbers and then it goes to a lot of the jazz things, which are very nice. I like them. And then I just skip back to Another Day of Sun. It's Another Day of Sunshine. So it's exciting.
What other Oscars did this win? Didn't it win for production design, or am I making that up?
I don't have the list in front of me, Dan. I know what it didn't win for. Infamously, there was a huge botched error in envelope handling and reading that occurred that made the entire cast and crew of La La Land think that they had won Best Picture when they had not. And it was a catastrophic moment because that's never happened before, and it really makes those people who think they won quite embarrassed, and it really takes the moment away from the people who did win, which was Moonlight. So it worked out to be quite a mess, quite a catastrophe. I have seen Moonlight, and after having seen La La Land and Moonlight, I will tell you that I agree with the decision that Moonlight is worthy, I feel like that was a good choice. I feel like it is a better film overall that has a deeper meaning and message. I feel like this movie, La La Land, is a lot of fun, but I don't feel like I am challenged mentally in any way by any of the themes explored in the picture. And that's fine. It doesn't have to do that. But that also means that it doesn't have to win for Best Picture. That's okay. You can still like it. I don't agree with a lot of the bile, though, that how dare it. If it had won, then I would have been like, you know, that's kind of not correct or whatever. Like, I would have gone with the other one. But
you could imagine the Academy going like, look at us patting ourselves on the back again. We're giving ourselves another Birdman Award.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing, is I think a lot of people get in that mode. I don't know if you know this about me, Dan, but I hated Birdman. Hated Birdman.
Joe, would you consider yourself possibly a cynic with regards to the artist's pursuit and pain?
Yes, because most people are just full of themselves, and I feel like it is a level of pretentious self-involvement and self-indulgent auteur theory crap garbage that gets hoisted up as the best thing ever. I feel like a lot of people have aimed their Birdman guns on La La Land, and I feel like that's not entirely appropriate. Like I said, this is still a fun movie. Birdman's not a fun movie. Birdman wants you to know that it is the best, and I don't want Birdman to be the best. I want Birdman to die in a gutter. But
all right. This is not a rehashing of the Birdman episode.
Yes. Let's pull back. Also, you know, you got stuff like The Revenant.
No. We're not gonna go there either.
Yeah, I'm just saying, there are things that make people raise their eyebrows and scoff and, you know, say the Academy Awards don't matter for anything. And that happens a lot. And La La Land was apparently one of those targets this year. And I feel like that wasn't entirely deserved. I do make fun of some of the storytelling involving Ryan Gosling's character, who is central to the story, and his sort of simple pursuits that could be summed up in the terms of any person who's in college, I guess, but he's that's not like Birdman, and it's not like The Revenant, and it's not like some of the other pretentious films that have historically won awards they didn't quite deserve. So, I feel like a lot of people need to dial it back on the righteous venom that they're flinging at La La Land.
Right, and this is a story of pretension as old as Hollywood, right? It's the aspiring performers who moved to LA to pursue their dream, which is just, like, that's the baseline level of nonsense you have to accept before you can get into all the fun stuff and then the interesting stuff about this particular story. How stereotypical is it that you've got the girl who moves there to be an actress and you've got this guy who wants to, well, he's going to be a musician instead of an actor, but it's basically the same story. Like, they're working terrible jobs in the hopes that they can get a terrible audition for a terrible show and then hopefully build off of that. And eventually, you know, they're going to become famous one of these days. And, they're not, because that's not how the world works. But, you know, this story, veers into the relationship between two of those people and how they sort of play off of each other and, you know, the pursuit of each other's dreams and the motivation that they give each other, primarily because as broken artists, they can't really motivate themselves, or they would have done that in the first place and the movie would have been like 10 minutes long. But it's fun along the way, because you got your dancing and your what have yous, and you got Ryan Gosling, and he's funny.
Yeah. Well, okay. I'll push back on one thing here. Ryan Gosling has incredible charm and charisma. And that is fortunate, because I can't think of anybody else you could cast as this person and for you to be comfortable watching him be a buffoon as much as he is, because this character is not exactly likable. He has a lecturing moment about the history of jazz, where he's mansplaining to Emma Stone all about how jazz came to be and why it's important and why people can't look down on it and why he wants to save it and bring it back, which a lot of people have interpreted to mean that Ryan Gosling is saving jazz by the end of the film. That is not how that should be read, but it just means that he's just a little full of himself in regards to the character is a little full of himself in regards to this. So it doesn't like win you bonus points if you're like, if you know people who are like that, who are also full of themselves and who also talk up a good game about some particular thing that they're interested in, and you're just like, slow it down, dial it down a notch.
Obviously they set it up as a best case scenario for themselves, because she doesn't get it or doesn't care about jazz at all, and he's very enthusiastic, so he's going to express his love for it and try and get her to understand, which obviously is going to come across like that.
Yeah, well, so do people, I mean, in real life.
If his passion was he really loves writing Sanskrit, people wouldn't be like, look, he's trying to save Sanskrit. It's just like he likes this thing that's most people don't know about or don't care about.
Yeah, well, also, there is the whole element of his inability to play the set for J.K. Simmons at the dining club where he's playing the piano for some chill Christmas tunes. That, like, you don't feel any empathy with the character at all, even though he's like, oh yeah, I'm lost in the moment, man, I'm doing my thing, and it's like, this is just, you're just a jerk, like.
Well, you know, it's the world is starting to be like optimistic, and he's like, you know what, I'm gonna play with the music that's true to me, and someone's gonna hear it and they're gonna love it and whatever, and then reality, J.K. Simmons slaps him back down and says, like, what are you doing? That's not what I hired you to do. Get out of here. This is not a place for aspirational dreamers. This is a place where people come to eat dinner and want to listen to some okay music. So stop with your whatever the hell you're doing.
Yeah. This is
one of the a tweet that I quite enjoyed and remembered. Between Nice Guys and La La Land, it was a great year for Ryan Gosling pretended to be surprised badly.
Oh god, he's so bad at it. Like,
that was from Peter Atencio, the director of you know, the Key and Peele things and Keanu and stuff.
He's oh man,
I like his fake being surprised. It's clearly fake and it's amusing to me.
I think he has to know that it comes across as fake, because there's no one that who behaves in that manner, but it is so strange.
Evan Costello, when he opens like that,
when he opens the door to his apartment and he freaks out about his sister being in the other room and he's like flinging himself backwards like a foot, it's like, cool it. But then he's also surprised like three or four other times in the film, but he's just like freaking out and it's just like, please dial it down. please chillax. Like no one behaves in this manner. Even
if
they're actually
better fake surprised than nice guys, I think.
Now I do like some of the comedy moments he is given to work with here. Like when he's waiting outside to take her to Los Angeles and she's not there and he's like, ah, and he starts driving off and then she's like, wait. It's just, yeah, I got the coffee. It's fun. I like that. Mm-hmm. It's good.
A little subversion of expectations. Yeah. You know, she's going to give up, but no, she's there with coffee.
Yeah. And, you know, he's got that Ryan Gosling charm when they're walking back from that party. And he's walking to her car, helping her find it. And there's the whole thing about like, hold that up to your chin. It acts as an antenna. You'll die soon, et cetera.
I like the whole scene where Ryan Gosling just plays Ryan Gosling, where he's doing the, playing Iran on the guitar.
Oh, so
I was just standing there staring, shaking his head.
I really like that. And also the photographer shoot. He's pretty good at playing like contempt. like that about him.
Yeah, I forget what was the direction. It was something like look down or
yeah,
put your
bite
head
your
down,
bite then... your lower lip. Look down, move your glasses down, and look over the top of your glasses a little bit. There you go. Now start playing. Okay, now stop biting your lip. There you go. Now play something else. You're doing a good job. But of course he starts playing the song that he really wants to play, City of Stars. So anyway, those are basically the big criticisms that I have. I like Emma Stone. I like Emma Stone's performance. I like her throughout the picture. I think that she does a good job bouncing around in the ever-shifting tone of the film. So that's good. Good for her. I like her. I want her to do well in life. Now
she does well at playing aspirational dreamer who gets shot down and gets sad and gives up and then comes back and is true to herself and all of these things that she needed to be in this movie.
At least she didn't have to have an argument with Michael Keaton.
I was gonna say, yeah, she was in the Birdman there too.
Yeah. I like her in this. I feel like she was well cast. She's likable. We want her to do well at all points through the production. There's tension and awkwardness and self-doubt that come across in her performance. It's all good. And she also needs to sing and dance. So, you know, she's got to do everything. There is not a box unchecked that she needs to deliver on here. So I applaud her. I think that she definitely deserved acclaim for her performance and she received it. So
yeah, that's right. She got one of them Oscars.
Yeah, and then her second envelope that was supposed to not be distributed was the thing that. So anyway, she did a good job, and I think that even when it comes to things like comic timing and chemistry with her and Ryan Gosling, it's all there. I like the construction of her first reveal where we follow her story along and we see that she is a struggling barista and what she dreams of. It's very obvious that the lady who comes in with her back to the camera the entire time and they're in awe and they're going to, oh no, it's on the house. And it's like, oh no, I'm going to pay for it. And it's like, this is her dream. And it's clear.
And did they really surprise you on that reveal at the end there?
No, there was no surprise, but I like that they did it because I feel like that was completing the circle. Film 101 for your character achieving their goals and aspirations or whatever. But
it was part of her path. She was close. She could see it. She just needed to get there, etc.
Yeah, and so I like that. And then we follow her along with her from her job on the lot where she's dreaming of being a star to her apartment that she shares with a bunch of other women who are also similarly aspiring to be in various aspects of production, and they're going to parties to try to what?
Dressed in primary color dresses.
Well, you got to tell them apart.
it was good. I liked the production design of their apartment or what. I think I've stayed in a house/apartment that looks just like that out there. And then, yeah, all of their colorfulness and the dance number and all that fun stuff. It was good.
I felt honest. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. I felt like the beauty of their bohemian chic apartment was a little much, but
a little too nice for Hollywood.
Yeah, just a little too nice. But they dialed it back when they went to Ryan Gosling's. So I feel like that was the appropriate bachelor pad level for LA, and that helped balance those two extremes of that spectrum in production design. But
like a tiny table, some popcorn ceiling, and just like crumbling stucco on the wall.
Well, and beige, so much beige. And mismatched lamps, the whole lack of 9 yards. But they have a big song and dance number, Medicine, which is the wine, which is nice. I like that. And they're going to go out on the town because she needs to get out there. And you never know who you'll meet or who will see you. And that's how you can make those connections. It reveals the dream that many people have when they move to LA, that they'll run into someone at a party, rub elbows with stars, etc. They'll meet a casting coordinator, director, or something. Someone in the crowd will take you where you want to go. If you're the someone ready to leave, the someone ready to do what you need to do to rediscover you and make you more than who you're seeing now. Now, obviously, that doesn't happen for her character, but it is the dream that she's following along with. They go to a big party. There's a pool. There's people chilling and dancing and stuff. It's a big thing. And she
Hollywood dream, and it results in her car getting towed.
Yeah, well, that's also part of Hollywood. I actually laughed when they did the abrupt cut to the no parking sign. People who are not from this area are perhaps not familiar with the fact that we have lots of terrible no parking signs. That is one of the simpler ones. But there are some parts of town where you'll see 3, 4, 5 different pieces of signage stacked on top of one another. And you're supposed to somehow determine through the process of elimination which one of those signs applies to the time that you're trying to park. Hers was straightforward, but it still amused me because it is something that is that abounds. There's plenty.
She's still new to the city.
Yeah, she's from Boulder City, Nevada. But her car gets towed, and then for some reason she decides to walk by herself alone in Hollywood at night.
Perhaps the least realistic part of the movie.
Yeah, I was like, call Lyft, girl. Come on.
I forget, did they do like a I have no cell signal kind of thing too, because she's in the hills?
And she says, oh, come on, when she checks something on her phone, and then she starts walking. I couldn't tell if that meant like her signal was not there or the power had died. But
yeah, one of those two.
Yeah, but still, go back to the party or something. Like, where did the rest of your friends go? They all were just like, see you later.
They all found casting agents, and they're on with their own movie.
Oh, jeez. So she walks down through the Hollywood Hills all by herself and passes by a building facade with a nice painting of different movie stars and stuff sitting around. It is kind of a crummy painting, but I mean, it's nice in terms of the film. She stands in front of some glass block with neon illuminating either side of her. Here's the jazz tunes that are coming from, beyond. She walks inside and, is smitten by Ryan Gosling, who had, honked at her at the beginning of the film.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Another delightful Hollywood trope or whatever. It's just there's no rhyme or reason or explanation to it. It's just something drew her into there, and it's her destiny and such.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I like about that is they cut from that moment where you know it's Ryan Gosling to his side of the story, rejoining back at the beginning of the film, back when he had passed her car, and him going about his day of going to the retro drive-through dairy and sitting in front of the orange mural and glaring at the samba and tapas bar. And then he goes in and fake surprise. Laura, his sister, is there and she's berating him. I liked her because she felt grounded. And up to this point in the film, there wasn't so much ground.
Rosemary DeWitt. She's good. I like her.
Yeah, and so she's there, unfortunately, all too briefly, because they basically just have her show up a few other times as like window dressing of, hey, look, they're engaged. Hey, look, they're married. And I was like, but she could say, I would have liked her if she showed up for some counseling or something where she's like, yeah, you're a doofus. Go get her back.
Well, that's, you know, she serves as the reasonable plot device of saying, look at me moving on with my life. What are you doing over there? Nothing.
Yeah, I like that she sat in the stool that she wasn't supposed to sit on. I like that she brought the rug and he didn't
right,
want the rug.
I forgot about the stool.
Yeah.
He had a special stool. Whose stool was that?
I don't even remember. But she unrolls the rug and he's like, I don't want the rug. And she says, what if I told you Miles Davis pissed on it?
And especially it's great that the stool has a nice little light pointed on it hanging up on the wall there at his club at the end.
Yeah. Because it's apparently a museum.
It's a special little stool.
What?
Who among us does not have a special little stool that someone famous sat on?
I mean, it happened several times a day. But so...
Isn't your apartment in Los Angeles basically like a... What was the restaurant where they had all the memorabilia and crap? Planet Hollywood?
No, my apartment is not Planet Hollywood.
Did I tell you about when I stayed at the Planet Hollywood Hotel in Vegas? It was like when they just changed hands from the Aladdin. My room had one of the Fifth Element monster heads in an acrylic box hanging on the wall. What were those things called?
Mangalores?
Yeah, Mangalore. It had a Mangalore head in an acrylic box hanging on the wall. And it was terrifying when you wake up and roll over and go, holy crap, there's a face right here next to my bed. Because, you keep forgetting because you don't spend that much time in the room.
Oh, man.
It would have been better if there was a jazz stool in their box.
I would never have stayed at the Planet Hollywood.
It was a work thing. I didn't have a choice.
Okay. Yeah. No. That's not much of my ideal mixing environment. But whatever. First time I went to Las Vegas, I actually stayed at the Four Seasons. They had a special promotional rate thing. I didn't realize it was on top of the Mandalay Bay and it had like a weird second entrance to it. And then you took an express elevator up to the like three floors that were the Four Seasons inside from the lobby area. It was very peculiar.
It's a weird but nice hotel. That's always where they, Fujinon has their big NAB event where you can eat, you know, all you can eat free sushi and there's a Rod Stewart cover band. the guy actually looks just like Rod Stewart too.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah, and he's got like a 25-year-old girlfriend who, you know, dresses in the fancy dresses and dances around, saying.
Oh dear.
I assume they still do it there. I haven't been there in many, many years, but that was the thing.
Okay. Now back to La La Land and not Lost Land. They have he goes about his thing about how he's, you know, got goals or whatever, and he was ripped off and stuff and his bills are past due, but he's got things or whatever. And then he's going to go to his job thing. And there's a scene with J.K. Simmons and he does the, you know, one for you, one for me. No, we're not doing that. Okay. two for you and one for me. No. Still no. It's like,
stick to the sentence. All right. Yeah. Very good. Stick to the sentence.
Yeah. So it's a mutual agreement then. So... Yeah, that's a nice negotiation, but he plays all the Christmas classics. I don't understand his contempt for the Christmas classics, but I am not a musician, so I can understand more the appeal of hearing Christmas music rather than being somebody who's forced to play it. I suppose if you are a musician who takes his craft very seriously, that it would be somewhat beneath you to stoop to these classics. But
I'm trying to think of an analog for you, like respected visual effects compositor Joe Steele has a gig where he's, I don't know what, like painting signs on like Peter Piper pizza commercials. Be like, I see you got some other work over there I could do. No, just stick to the Peter Piper pizza commercial. All right, fine.
So anyway,
you've never had to deal with that, have you?
No, nothing has ever approached those levels. Thank you.
work on the schlock instead of something you actually want to work on.
Yes, I don't understand working on schlock. This does not compute. That's never happened.
Maybe
so,
you just need to dance more, and then once you get fired from your job of making schlock, you'll get your dream job of owning a place where they don't make schlock. I don't know what the analog is there. The metaphor falls apart.
I worked on 2 Smurf movies, Dan. Now
maybe they'll make another Smurf movie for you.
No.
How about we just find another movie full of blue people that you can work on?
Sure. Now let's meander back to when their paths cross, because they make eye contact. He gets fired after his big jazz number thing, where he's the only one who he can perceive in the room, and then it snaps back to reality, and nobody was paying any attention to him, except for J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons just glaring at him from the kitchen.
And J.K. Simmons fires him. And then Ryan Gosling attempts to negotiate his firing, but no. this is a no. He goes to leave, and Emma Stone, having recognized him, and recognizing that this is the honking guy, tries to say something nice about the music, because she had responded emotionally to what she was hearing, but he shoulder checks her and leaves the establishment. Not a good choice.
No, he was not in a good mood.
No, and
he almost let his big moment pass him by.
Yeah, and so she goes out for things and stuff, and then we got the spring, and there's the pool party, and the 80s band, generic 80s band, and they are playing the song that I can't remember the name of, but I mostly just remember because of Corky Romano, which is it's not really, like, I don't know what that says about me, but so they're playing
like
that.
A Scorpion song or something?
No, it wasn't Scorpions. It was I mean, it's gonna drive me nuts now. What was it, Dan? What was the thing?
Tainted Love?
Nope.
Apparently that's in this movie somewhere.
But it wasn't that.
Take on Me?
Yes. Take on
there
Me.
There you go.
By A-ha.
Yes, that's the one. And you can tell at this point in the movie.
Take on
no,
me.
Don't do it. Don't do
take
it.
Take on me. Take me home. Sorry. What?
Boom's going to turn that into a ringtone.
Nope.
Yeah, you can tell this is a fake Hollywood, because he actually gets a second chance at something, because Emma Stone shows up here, and they get to reconnect after he was rude
well,
in the restaurant.
She gets the advantage of being in a position of power where she can make an audience request.
Mm-hmm.
And she chooses to do Iran by the Flock of Seagulls to cause him pain.
It is a Flock of Seagulls, not the Flock of Seagulls.
Okay, sorry. I got the article wrong. he does that, and he's full of contempt, and he's angry at her for this. Then later on,
apparently that song is an insult to a musician, which I don't know. I enjoy the song.
Yeah, I mean, I liked her overacting to enjoying it. Mm-hmm. I thought that was nice. Rubbing some salt in the wound as he is upset. And then later on, when they rendezvous, and he says to her, like, oh, you know, that was like the worst thing, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, I realize I was a little curt with you. So that's a nice apology. I also like the other guy that she meets here at the scene when they're trying to connect her with someone, and what's his name, Craig, or something, it doesn't matter. Anyway, he's like, I'm good at world building, blah 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 blah, I'm really known
right,
for that.
Yeah,
a lot of buzz
I don't
about
exactly
me right now,
like I was saying, but I wonder if he's like an industry guy, or they're just like, go be insufferable, like every insufferable person you've ever met at a party, or if they actually wrote that dialogue for him, because it's just so spot on nonsense.
Oh, so I like the part where he says there's a lot of buzz about me. That's my favorite part. But
got buzz. He's getting heat in the industry.
Mm-hmm. My beverage has buzz and heat. It is a Desert Swarm from Coachella Brewing Company. It's bad.
I wouldn't recommend it.
It is a beer. It is a Belgian style wheat beer. It is made with honey from African killer bees. So there's that.
I had a nitro coffee beer from a local place yesterday that was actually quite good.
Mm-hmm. I don't typically beer. Like the nitros. If I,
what?
I don't know. I know they're smooth and whatever, but
Guinness, Boddington's, love them both.
Okay.
It's better than IPAs, that's for sure.
Oh God, everything's better than an IPA. IPAs should burn in hell.
The focus puller in this movie was better than an IPA. If we're making false equivalencies.
Sure. The map box in this movie is better than the IPA. But so the thing about this is that they have this awkward introduction, and later on when everybody's waiting to get their keys to their car from the valet that they have somebody hired for their party, she's stuck in line with the other guy, but Ryan Gosling already has his keys. She's like, okay, can you do me a favor and get me my keys? He's like, I can't hear you. He makes her work for it, and then he's like, okay, fine. And he's like, well, which one are yours? And she says, Prius, and the entire box is full of Prius keys. I love it.
Yes, of course it is.
Just like the one with the green ribbon. Like, this movie can do comedy when it wants to do comedy.
Her keys are like a suitcase from an old Midwestern lady. You got to tie a little ribbon around it so you can tell which one's yours at the airport.
Yeah, I know. Mine's gold.
Do you have a ribbon tied around your suitcase?
I have a gold ribbon tied around my suitcase. Thank you very much.
Oh, now we know which one's yours so we can steal it.
Yes.
Take all of your valuables.
Sure. I don't know if anybody really would want that, but sure. They go on a little walk back to the car, past a lot of lampposts in a very Hollywood Hills, Griffith Park kind of way, and they look out onto the San Fernando Valley. So I guess they're on the other side of the hill. This is, of course, not really how that would look, because it would be kind of awkward to try to arrange this song and dance number at that particular hour, and then do that every single night you make a mistake. So no, that is in fact the magic of visual effects that are helping our friends here. It's nice.
Way to ruin the movie magic, Joe. I haven't seen a breakdown on that, but
Dan.
Hmm?
Just, I haven't seen a breakdown either. Just trust me.
Did you see Matt Lyons?
No, I mean, it seemed a little crisp, to be perfectly honest, but it wasn't bad. I thought it was fine.
Something in the movie was crisp.
It had the jittering, twinkling lights and defocus and stuff. So, you know, maybe they shot a plate for it or something. But regardless, it was not there when they were doing their song and dance number. I like their song and dance number. I like the Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers, you know, some like a hot element to that, where they're just sort of sassing back and forth, and how you know, wishes he was there with somebody who could actually appreciate this, especially like the line about his polyester suit.
Say there's nothing here. Well, let's make something clear. I think I'll be the one to make that call.
What's your call?
And though you look so cute in your polyester suit,
it's wool.
You're right. I'd never fall for you at all.
But yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, it's a good little number. And then they dance around, they do their thing, and it's, you know, it's cute. And then camera whips around, and her car's like right there.
Yeah, well, she does the chin thing, and then it's right in front of him. She has a call, they were interrupted by the marimba from her iPhone, that she has a call from Greg that she takes, and she's going to go meet Greg. Ryan hears that, and she asks if he would like a ride back to his car, and he says, oh, no, I'm just right around here. And then, sure enough, she leaves, and then he goes back the other direction, all the way back to where the party was, and his car had been parked in front of the party the entire time. So that was a moment of rare, well, I was going to say something nice, but I guess he was probably just being prideful and didn't want to ride back to his car, but whatever.
No, he was being kind. He was spending time with the lady. He was walking her to her car, all of those mm-hmm. things.
Yes. Yes.
It's young romance just starting to blossom, Joe.
Yeah. Indeed.
Why do you hate love, Joe?
The kindergarten level where it's like fake hating each other. Sure enough, he worms his way into the lot where she works, where some lady is very upset about her pastry that she took a bite of that is not gluten-free. It is, I don't think, an effort to make fun of people who actually require gluten-free food so much as it is an effort to make fun of people who don't require gluten-free food and who are perhaps lacking in knowledge about what would possibly be in a pastry. But
frankly, it's irresponsible for a studio to stock any gluten at all on the lot there, because that's just, you know, people got to fit into costumes. Come on, guys.
No, well, see, it's irresponsible to show people working on a lot. should have just been people that work in accounting. I don't know if you've been to a lot, Dad, but
I have. They have cafes and things.
Yeah, but there's not a lot of like things being made like there at the moment.
No. No.
Yeah. See, one of the things that this movie expects you to believe is that there's nonstop Hollywood movie magic happening around every corner, as if it were the golden age of Hollywood.
No.
The reality is most of those fake building facades on the back lot have been converted into offices or, in the case of one of the locations in this film, coffee shops. And it's cute, and the accountants that work on the lot and the lawyers really like it, but there's not a lot of stuff being filmed there these days.
I'm pretty sure the Starbucks at the Warner Brothers lot closed at like 4:30. That's why we couldn't go to it.
I don't even know when the one on the Sony lot closed. There was some like third party coffee vendor thing that they had for a while, and then they replaced that with a coffee bean when they built the new building. And that coffee bean was very fancy and nice, but it wasn't really worth the walk to go from where we were off site to the lot.
Was there a kiosk on wheels that they could, you know, roll around?
No, that's what we had on our lot off site. Because there was the studio lot, and then there was where ImageWorks was, which was down the street across from Culver City Honda, and the Trader Joe's there. And so they had a little what they called a cart, but it was more of like a permanent kiosk that had no wheels. They would make coffee there, but it was not very good.
Give me a kettle and an AeroPress, and I'll walk around a lot making coffee for people.
No, see, and what we used to do is sometimes, because the coffee wasn't very good, we would try to sneak around through one of the other exits so that we wouldn't have to walk past that coffee kiosk when we were going to go get
so
coffee from Starbucks.
Give you side eye while you're walking to Starbucks.
Yeah. So
why don't you support local small businesses, Joe?
That was not a good local small business.
That corporate conglomerate is driving out the little guy.
I think it might have. It's been a couple of years. I don't know if they're still operating.
What if his dream was to make coffee for millions of people, and he's getting shut down because people avoid his little kiosk at the studio lot?
Well, it wasn't a guy, so thank you, Dan. That's very gender normative.
Well, whatever. I'm just being whoever they were.
Yes, but it doesn't matter. The point is, lots are not like this film these days would lead you to believe, especially not with the, I don't know if you noticed, there were like three Roman guards, centurions, who were walking by in full regalia. And I was like, I can't tell if that's supposed to be a reference to 1950s Hollywood or if that's a reference to Hail Caesar, which shot on the Warner Brothers lot.
Well, what did they? They walked past a little production. I can't remember what that was. It was just like a fake little park or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, they had some fake park that they walked past, and like a fake cemetery they walked past. And you saw some of the other buildings that were on the lot, like the whatever that Roman looking building is that they also used in Hail Caesar, because they used the same backlot. There are bits of it you see, and they also like walk past something where they're shooting a production on a soundstage, and you peer into the soundstage and see people setting up things, and you see the like gels on that rotary thing, whatever that is. I don't go on set, so I don't know the name of this stuff. What is that called?
The gels on the rotary thing.
Yeah, you didn't see the. It was like a big disc, and it had different colored gels in six circles around the disc. It looked like you would rotate the gel over the light.
Oh, I don't know. Just rotating gel holder. I don't think there's a technical name for
rotating
that.
Rotating gel holder. Thank you, Dan.
Most of the lingo is reserved for the very.
Yeah, I thought you were a director.
Used things. But
what are you going to do?
We don't use rotating gel thingies because we don't usually have a lot of like rotating color live on camera. You just put the gel over the light, and then you take it off, you put the other one on.
Yeah, well, my point was that it was old-fashioned.
And really what we were seeing back there is the crew slash Teamster setting up for the final scene of the movie. They just got there, you know, they had their build week before they actually had to shoot there, and we're just peering through.
Yeah. We're peering through time and space. They have their magical little walk, and then they talk about Greg, and they talk about going to go see Rebel Without a Cause, etc., right? They're going to go to the Rialto and do that.
Because she has all kinds of trivia about, like, the little the window where so-and-so stood out of her, what, Casablanca or something. I don't remember what the story she was telling, but she's clearly infatuated with old Hollywood, but she hadn't yet seen that classic, so he was going to take her to it.
Yeah. They part ways. She forgets that this night that they're going to go do that, that it's actually, oh, I'm sorry. And first she has one more embarrassing audition, which goes horribly. The thing that she had been, looking forward to. So she walks out of there embarrassed, goes back to her place, and then she's looking forward to going to the Rialto because she drove past it. And she's looking forward to Rebel Without a Cause, but she forgets that Greg is there. And that they're going to go pick up Greg's brother from the airport, and they're going to go to dinner. I would just like to point out that wherever they are, it appears to be somewhere in the West Hollywood or Mid-City area for this apartment, and that they, or maybe even Hollywood, but I think it's more flat than that. So then they went from there all the way to LAX to pick up his brother, then drove all the way back up to Mid-City to Jar, which was the restaurant that they went to. And I was like, forget it. Like, I don't care who it is that's related to me. They're going to take an Uber or something. Like, I'm not doing that.
It's Josh Pence, though. Josh Pence is very famous. You got to pick him up,
I guess. And wasn't the brother, Finn Whitrock, whatever his name is?
What?
Greg? Wasn't that Greg?
Finn? His actual name?
Yeah, the actor, yes.
Oh, I don't know.
Sometimes they're actors in movies and they play parts.
Finn Whitrock, yes, that's his name.
Okay.
What do we know him from?
American Horror Story.
Right. Yeah. I actually saw some of that one. That's the one that you did the stuff on.
Yeah, with the twins. They go to a very boring dinner, and it looks very nice, and very mid-century, in ways that it probably shouldn't. There wasn't one person in a tracksuit anywhere in that establishment. I don't know if you've noticed, Dan, but people in Los Angeles dress pretty casually for dinner, so it was a little surprise. I was a little surprised to see everybody basically in suits and dresses.
I don't think I've ever seen anyone in a tracksuit.
Well, we will go around sometimes, and I'll show you all the fancy establishments that I go to. So they have a really nonsense conversation, and they're very horrible smarmy business guys, and they're berating theaters and going to theaters, and oh, people don't pay attention and they talk over stuff, and they're on their phones all the time, and he gets a text message. He's like, oh, look, I get a text message, which is supposed to be ironic because he's just complaining about that right now. It's very subtle. Her mind starts to wander, and she pays attention to the jazz music.
Well, he has to get his text messages, by the way, not to interrupt you, because he's in the middle of his lawsuit against Facebook.
So she pays attention to the music, and she recognizes it, and she's like,
by the way, I found it. Exterior of Mia's apartment is in Koreatown.
Okay, so yeah, mid-city-ish, Koreatown.
Langham Apartments, Normandy, Koreatown.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a long drive back to LAX.
Yeah, the point stands. And look up Jar. It's basically over by the Beverly Center. She's like, forget this. Sorry, I can't. And then she runs out of there like she's in a 1980s sitcom, and she's got to make her plane. Or I don't know what was that particular motivation to end her relationship so abruptly, but she does. And then she goes off to find the guy who had explained jazz to her. She runs down beautifully lit street, which would not be like that at all, but she does. And she arrives at the Rialto, which is in the opposite direction, I think, and meets him by going up onto stage, and no one yells at her. And then she sits down with him, and then the movie burns. But not before we can see a part of Griffith Observatory, and that inspires them. She gets an idea once the film catches fire that they will go to Griffith Observatory. And so they do.
That was his idea, because she hadn't been there either.
Oh, right.
He's the cynical old, he's been in LA for a long time. She's new there.
I thought she said, I have an idea or something. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
One of them had an idea.
Yeah, somebody. You rub two people together, you get an idea. So they go up to...
get a child.
Well, that happens in this movie, too. So they get to the observatory, and they drive around in a way that I'm not sure you can do.
No, you definitely can't do that.
No, but then they also break into the building in a way that doesn't set off any alarms. And then they walk through the whole entire thing that probably would have motion sensors and stuff going off, but whatever. They're enjoying the exhibits. And then they start dancing, and then they go to the planetarium, and they turn that on, and then they dance through space, which is, I don't know how to say this. I didn't hate it, but I felt like it was asking me to buy into some magic that perhaps was not within me as a person, that perhaps I'm full of lead and sour apples. I don't know. I couldn't quite achieve the heights that they were soaring to. I did like when they were dancing in silhouette through space. There was something that was almost a sort of 1960s about it or something. Like, and they're waltzing through space and time.
Yes, they're finally both their paths have fully crossed. They're allowed to, you know, start in their blossoming romance, and they're in this dreamlike state dancing around, and all things are possible through love, including dancing and flying around through a planetarium, evidently.
Yeah, so... Oy gewalt. Then they land back inside of the planetarium, and the lights come back on, and how exciting. Iris in, and to black. And they have the next segment. What is it? Summer now? Is the thing?
Probably. I don't even know.
Yeah. So there are title cards, by the way. I did not mention them, but I like them.
In old timey Hollywood font.
Yeah, old timey Hollywood font that maybe could be, I don't know, little annoying to some people, but I like it.
Yeah, you like it a lot. You Instagrammed one of them.
Yes.
My goodness, Joe used Instagram.
I know. Well, I was walking down a palm-lined street, and I was just like, this is, one, very La La Land-esque, and two, I'm going to put this on Instagram. So...
Had a little hop in your step, dancing around, do a little pirouette.
I was trying not to do that, but it was hard while I was listening to Another Day of Sun. But I did... stopped dancing and moved over behind the shadow of a hedge so that I could quickly use the selection tools in Pixelmator and get the lettering out of a screen grab that I had of one of the title cards, because it is actually spring now. It is no longer winter because it's March 1st. So I had to get the spring letters out of there and then paste that on top and then do a new drop shadow because I couldn't pull the old drop shadow out of the old thing. But fortunately, the white letters were easy to get out of there. That's the magic of that.
I'll be honest, I didn't even notice that you put the letters over your own photo. I thought you just stole a screen grab from a trailer or something.
Oh, no, it's not from the film.
Okay, well, it looks like it is.
Well, the spring one is actually the pool party.
Oh, well.
Yes.
Look at you.
I know.
Visual effects work on it.
Movie magic.
What you should have done is dove onto the hood of a passing car and spun around and then hung out on the hood while you were photoshopping and then jumped back off in a very sort of starfish motion when you were done.
Well, I was in Beverly Hills, Dan. I didn't want to get arrested. Now, there's no singing and dancing in Beverly Hills. It's a different city.
It's against the law in Beverly Hills.
I'm sure it is. They have all kinds of loitering and panhandling restrictions. So I'm sure there's stuff about song and dance too. But Beverly Hills is a separate municipal entity from the city of Los Angeles.
Well, congratulations on being a separate municipal entity.
Yes.
It's big news.
No, it isn't really. There's all kinds of other weird local politics. But anyway.
Is that why you don't believe in dreams and love? Because you don't live in Los Angeles?
I mean, I think the problem is deeper than that, but sure.
You live in the harsh, pragmatic streets of Beverly Hills.
Yes, rough and tumble. Now, any rough and tumble palm tree lined streets. But anyway, yes. Anyway, the photo of the palms that I took, that was a thing.
It's nice.
I did the Pixelmator thing because I can do that because I'm a tortured artist who can't express himself, and I'm making commercial schlock, apparently, was what the movie would like to have everyone believe.
Well, I'm glad you finally decided to follow your passion of photoshopping text over top of Instagram photos.
Yeah, to promote a movie that I kind of thought was okay.
That's good. It's good. It really increases your brand.
Yeah, I know.
There's a lot of buzz around your Instagram feed right now.
Oh my God, so much buzz. People really know me for my world building. But so anyway, then we get to the part of the film that starts to get a little weird, where he gets his offer to do the thing with the stuff. And
yeah, you get the no backstory introduction to John Legend, who's a guy he used to play with who screwed him over somehow. But who now invited him to go play in a band, and he's like, no, get away from me, I'm giving you weird Ryan Gosling side eye. And Emma's like, well, what's the deal? He's offering you a gig, why don't you want to do that? And she's like, nah, it's complicated.
Yeah, but then he overhears Emma Stone talking to her mom on the phone, and of course the mom is asking all the details that one would normally ask, you know, like, you know, he doesn't have a steady job right now, but he's, you know, he's working to things. Yeah, he wants to open a jazz club.
Well, I also love that the conversation, she was talking about her like one woman show that she was gonna do, and she's like, well, no, nobody's gonna pay for it, actually I'm going to pay to put it on. And the parent is clearly dumbfounded at the concept, which is just so great. I love it.
Yeah, theater is a special kind of robbery. Now
no, I just love the idea of just, I assume you have similar stories, but like trying to explain what I do for a living to literally anyone who has, it's not in the tangentially related production business. They're just so, they don't understand any of it. They're just like, well, so who do you make things for? It's like, well, whoever, it doesn't really matter. Right. And what is, you do the camera? It's like, no, it's all of it. It's, you know, it's.
Yeah,
there's more to it. You don't just, you hit the thing and you do the thing.
Right. That's why it says a film by Dan Sturm.
Oh God. Someday I will have a film by No, I won't, because I'm not a very good writer. I don't enjoy writing things. I like directing things, but I hate writing.
That's okay. I think some people still take that credit anyway, regardless of whether or not they wrote it.
Yeah, I guess, you know, Scorsese.
Yeah. There's some egos that need to be satisfied.
It's not his ego. It's just his collective bargaining agreement with the unions.
Sure. She's going to do her one woman play, and she's so excited about this and the creative expression that will come from this. She encourages him to pursue this other thing, for him. And he goes in and he hears John Legend out, and then he participates in a jam session thing and signs the contract. Then does the jam session and realizes that the jazz music that he's signed on to do isn't the kind of jazz music that he likes to do. It's going to be new stuff in a new way. And he's very put off by this, but John Legend,
jazz is dying, man.
Yeah. John Legend takes him aside and says, you know, you look at all these revolutionaries who change things and you talk about them all the time, but you're a traditionalist instead of a revolutionary, and you gotta change your ways or jazz is gonna die. You don't see the kids there, do you? Those 90-year-olds who are out there in the club. And so I feel like John Legend has a point, but I feel like perhaps this is heavy-handed, in a sort of way that is designed to make John Legend appear to be some sort of bad person manipulating Ryan Gosling into making a decision that he wouldn't otherwise make.
He's a pragmatist and a capitalist. He's not an artist necessarely. He's talented, but he's not in it for the right reasons, man. And Ryan Gosling has ostensibly sold his soul for a modest income.
Yeah. Ordinarily I would reverse those two roles, but
well, you know.
Yeah.
What are you gonna do? Like,
no, but
he's trying to grow up. He's trying to be an adult. He's trying to.
I feel like they were heavy-handed with John Legend.
They're no more heavy-handed with him than they are with the whole like follow your dream, it's Hollywood nonsense.
Ugh.
Which, you know, again, that's the cost entry for something like this.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You gotta have the devil that tempts him away from his dreams in order to make him appear to, you know, just be a regular schmo, like in The Wedding Singer when he goes to try and get a job at the bank or whatever.
I think the worst part of this film is, I don't know, it's hard to say, but I think it might be the concert where she first hears him play and they have to cut to reaction shots of her being mortified for him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is kind of cringeworthy a little bit because it's not like he's killing like babies on stage or something. Calm down.
Right. She's mortified for him, but to a certain extent, he's kind of smiling on stage because A, he's making a little, I mean, we caught him far enough along into this transition where he's kind of like starting to buy his own BS, where he's in slightly enjoying at least the fame and the money that, like, he has a little bit of a smile on the fact that people are like rushing the stage and screaming at him. So he doesn't look like he's miserable, but she's just sort of like, you know, she's doing her best. I don't even know you anymore face from like 30 yards back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is where things start to unravel.
I like that song though, by the way. It's a good song.
Yeah, and John Legend can sing. Who knew? And they do a lot of fun stuff, and he's got that funky keyboard thing. I don't know what that is, but it's cool.
It's the wave of the future, is what it is. It's jazz, but electronified.
No, but I meant the one with the knobby keys, that thing.
Yeah, the one where the buttons don't really, like the keys don't really press down or whatever. It's kind of like a touchpad thing.
Yeah, that was it's a multi-touch keyboard. It was interesting. But anyway, I don't know what it is, but it was fun. And it had lights around it. Now she's mortified for him later on. There's the pain of them being apart as he tours, but he tries to make it back and he surprises her on one occasion. As she has been rehearsing for her stuff with her theater things and what have you. And he
building her props and her art stuff because she's got to do it all herself. It's, you know.
Yeah. So she arrives home to him, who acts fake surprised again. And he's cooked her dinner, or partially cooked some of the dinner. And there's candles, and he throws the mittens up and doesn't hit the candles, thank God. And then but he still hits the table with the mittens. And now they are together, and they sit there and they have their dinner scene. There's jazz playing on a vinyl record in the background, and fortunately the vinyl record knows to stop playing at a certain point in the conversation when things get really tense. I found this scene to be very tense and honest and raw, and deals with a lot of the things that are pressures on people who are pursuing things in art fields that might be artistic and commercial. Not merely, you know, art on your own time, but art on the time of somebody else, that these sorts of arguments can occur, where it's like, hey, I thought you were going to do this thing and you're doing this other thing. And like, are you really happy doing that other thing? And it's like, I don't even have time to know if I'm happy right now, but I thought I'm doing what you want. So
yeah, a little bit of the, why can't you just get a normal job like anyone else? Or
yeah.
Why can't you just, why do you have to turn it into a thing? Can't you just be a person?
Yeah, why can't you just put in a vacation request? Anyway, so.
I was going to say, I don't know about you, but I've had a couple 3 dozen of those conversations.
Let's not get into any specific examples of anything for...
No, I just, it's yeah, fair not, to say that I think basically everyone's had this conversation who tries to do art as a job.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to how important this particular dinner scene is and how raw and honest it is. Especially in comparison to other aspects of the film, which romanticize Hollywood life and romanticize the mythology of getting to be inside of Hollywood, that this deals with some practical concerns about wanting to be around one another when you're inside of a relationship. And
I mean, to be fair, this is even a conversation that one has with oneself when they're in this. It's like, you know, do you want to, how long are you willing to press your dream and be, you know, broke and going nowhere before you sort of give up and just try and do something to get by. Like, there doesn't even need to be a relationship element in this for that scene to resonate with anyone who's ever tried to do anything artistic. It's just like, that's the internal struggle all day, every day.
Yeah, you could be your own Emma Stone. Now,
I am totally my own Emma Stone.
that scene is comes to a very bitter end. Emma Stone leaves, and there's a fire alarm going off, and it's so loud. The thing is burned, whatever it was, and then she's out of there.
I think it was a cake.
Oof. You shouldn't burn cakes. No. Set a timer or something. it's bad. So
this is the problem. He's a traditionalist, so he didn't set an alarm on his Apple Watch because he doesn't have an Apple Watch that would have just dinged him on the wrist in the middle of the conversation to say, take the cake out of the oven.
Oh, maybe he set the record so that it would end when the timer went. That was his timer.
See, that's smart. That's convenient. that's both hipstery, anachronistic, and very clever at the same time.
That's exactly what it was. So he burns his cake, and she leaves, and she puts on her one-woman show, but presumably he will be going to that thing, but he's not because he forgot about a photo shoot. I would like to point out two moments of the several moments of extreme tension and relationship awkwardness come out of people forgetting that they had other appointments.
Right. Because it's extra tense too. I kind of like the way they play John Legend in this particular instance, where he's kind of struggling with what to do, and John Legend's basically like, "You're right, you good? We got this thing to do," and he's very much just sort of like the, "We're being adults now. Like, this is a thing we got to do." But like, if you have, I didn't feel like John Legend was like being like pressured, like, "You got to be there, man, for the band or whatever." You know, it's just like we have obligations that we committed to, and provided that nothing terrible has happened in your life or your loved one's life, you're going to be there for it, right? But like, he, you know, I expected him to sort of bail on it partway through, or to just go like, "You know what, this photo shoot is ridiculous and not worth it for something I should have been doing otherwise," because he's still sort of just like, "No, I'm an adult, I need to be here for this photo shoot no matter what, because this is also important." It's like, I don't think it's equally as important as the other thing. So I think in terms of letting one fall by the wayside, you should probably bail on the photo shoot. Like, they can Photoshop you in some other way. The weird guy with the accent can put you somewhere else.
Yeah, so he was wearing a hat and sunglasses. Somebody else could do that. Now, I will say, I thought it was a little weird, the decision on the character's part and the writer-director's part of not having him mention that he had other plans, not just to John Legend now, but previously, presuming that they had some sort of working relationship, he would have mentioned that he was very excited for his girlfriend who would be putting on her one-man show. And would anyone here like to go to that?
Well, I think it's, he's still trying to sort of keep the, you know, John Legend at arm's length because he doesn't want to get burned from whatever happened before that we're never going to know about. But yeah, it is, you know, he probably should have spoken up, but it's
also not clear whether, because John Legend isn't put in the position of giving him an ultimatum,
right? Exactly.
He gives himself his own marching orders here, where he decides to do this. Like, he this is on him. Like, no one put him up to this other than himself.
And for the story, that makes it all the more difficult and heartbreaking when they have their little burnout here in the next scene. But it seems like a slightly unrealistic choice, but it works to propel the story forward.
It's one of the things that makes him very unlikable, because when he shows up and her thing is over and it did not go well, according to the two guys that she overhears walking down the hallway.
two of the eight people in attendance.
Yeah, and she walks out of there with her stuff and is loading up her car. And he's trying to apologize that he had a photo shoot. I would like to point out this is a movie that was made for 2016, and that they both have smartphones. And not only can neither one of them set appointments for things, but neither one of them can call the other one.
Well, she was on stage, so she gonna get off stage to see a text message saying like, "I'm sorry, I got a thing." Not really gonna help anything.
But the sun was still up when he went outside to brood. Remember that, when he was standing in the alley, and he's like, "Oh, I don't know what to do. I'm so tortured. I'm standing in an alley." Remember that shot?
Yeah, I remember it. But you know, what's he gonna say? Like, he didn't want to, you know, throw her off her game by texting, say like, "Hey, probably not gonna be there." That probably wouldn't have been good for her.
Well, here's the thing. The end result here of not saying anything at all than just showing up after the whole thing's over.
It's not good.
No, not a good look. So Emma Stone...
But he did the kind thing and not screwing her up by telling her that, which turned into a good thing because there was a casting agent in the audience who wanted her for an audition.
Yeah, so what you're trying to say is Ryan Gosling is amazing. Way to go, Ryan Gosling.
No, I'm saying that through no fault or planning of his own, he managed to do something nice accidentally.
I think this is a stretch, but okay.
It's the stretch that the writers want us to take.
The writer.
Writer, sure.
Yeah, the writer, director, film by. Yeah, so their relationship is over. She is very upset, rightfully so. I don't feel like she overreacted at this point. I feel like this was deserved by the prior events that had led up to this, including their argument at dinner.
You mean she doesn't overreact by the splitting up, or by the also like I'm getting in my car and going back to my parents' house for a while?
Both, because I feel like things have been going downhill in the relationship in the film, so it makes sense that they would be broken up. Also, It seems professionally she's in a bit of a rough spot, and she might need some comfort from family members who won't necessarily judge her in her moment here.
Yeah, and this is another one of those moments that it's the one that they glorify less, but this is another one that he wants to glorify in terms of the mystique of Hollywood. Like this for her feels like the lowest point in her entire life. She loses her relationship, her career is going terribly, she's never going to make it. Her show was terrible. She doesn't have what it takes to make it at all.
And she can't pay back the theater because not enough people came.
No, she's ruined financially, professionally. Everyone hates her. She's terrible. She goes home, tail between her legs. But turns out she was good enough all along. She was great all along, so it seems. So follow your dreams and such. But like, you know, you have to have this scene and it has to be painful.
Well, and I feel it was appropriate. She goes home and she sees her awards and accolades for theater, because in her local town growing up, in her school, she was good. And she goes to L.A. and she finds out she's, you know...
She finds out she's one of 3 million people who are exactly her age who are also that good.
Yeah. And so there's something to that where she's back in her small town and surrounded by her family. And then Ryan Gosling leans on that freaking horn, because there was that call that came in from the casting director who couldn't reach her and who wants to offer her something. And he explains all this to her and says, you know, I'm going to be here at 8 a.m. To take you back to LA. So either you're here or you're not. And so he drives off and, I don't know, stays at a Motel 6 or something, Hampton Inn. He comes back in the morning. They have the thing where he thinks that she's not coming and starts to leave, and she's just there with all the coffee and stuff, because That was nice. And then they get in the car, they go back to LA, they go to the casting office, he's there with her to support her, she goes in, she gets this weird thing of them being like, yeah, we don't know what we're going to do for this movie, but it shoots in Paris from this time to this time, and it's going to be something where we build the role around the actress who it's going to be about. So can you just do something?
She gets the deal of all deals. She gets the development deal that takes place in Paris, which I don't know why it has a filming location without it, a concept, but whatever, that's the world that this movie wants us to live in. She gets the best deal. She goes straight to the front of the line because she's the star that she always thought she wanted to be.
Yeah, because the casting director had saw her and knew that she could tell a story, according to her. That would be the thing that that it appealed to her as a casting director trying to cast for this weird role of building something around somebody.
By the way, being able to tell a story, not necessarily an actor's primary talent, but
no,
sure.
I don't know if you're familiar with the role of a writer, but
and or, you know, director, producer, that's kind of what all those people do. Actors say it's good if they could tell a story, but it's better if they can believe the things that are coming out of their mouths.
Yeah, and say their lines. But she has a nice song here.
Would that it were.
Yeah. Would that it were would that it were so simple.
Exactly. See, this is why you can't be an actor.
I know.
Can't
I can't deliver the lines. It's complicated. Now, they have... the song and dance, well, not dance, song number, the light just goes on her and everything else disappears to blackness, and she's just a floating torso, because they gave her black pants for some reason, and so here's a floating shirt with some hands and a head, and she sings a song about her aunt in Paris, who would go in the Seine River in her bare feet, and flickering and liquor and stuff, and it's very dreamlike, the rambling song story that she tells. How she interpreted that a song was what they were going for, I don't know, because that's not really like in vogue, but
I think this is the moment where we're in a musical and she's not actually necessarily singing to them. That's the story mechanism.
Okay, see, I couldn't tell, because there are a lot of points in this film where you were definitely sure you were in a musical, like the dance number on top of the cars, or the planetarium and flying through space. But with this one, I wasn't sure if she was actually singing this, and it's only the everything gets darkened and stuff, that's the part that's otherworldly about it, that's the musical aspect to it, that in reality she was just singing this in an empty room. But I guess what you're saying makes sense too, that she was just saying all of this stuff and it just happens to be more of a song in this particular aspect through our lens as the audience. But
that's my assumption, because her one woman show was not a musical as far as we're aware. So I don't think she would have found it appropriate to start singing at all of these people.
Yeah, that's why I thought
all two of these people.
That's why I thought it was weird. But anyway, they said they would give her an answer in a couple of days. And so she talks to him on a park bench by Griffith Observatory, and it's like, well, where are we? And he's like, I know we're in Los Angeles. And it's like, oh, shut up, Ryan.
That's totally something I would say, though.
So, they're like, you know, he's like, you're going to go to Paris and do this thing. And she's like, oh, I don't know if I will. And he's like, you know, you're going to do it. And you're going to put your heart and soul and everything you got into it, because that's what you got to do, because this is what you've always wanted. And, I'll be here building my life and stuff. So, you know, that's
can't
where
be
we are.
Unencumbered by the complexities of this weird relationship that we have.
Yeah. And
yet, he has to say something like, I will always love you, because it's a movie and Hollywood and dreamers and stuff.
Yes.
But, you know, it's, again, here you're mixing the aspirational with the real life portion of it. But like this, you know, really, they wouldn't be able to keep their relationship going. Smartphones at all, it would have been a terrible idea for, what was she supposed to be gone, like 6 months or something like that?
I thought it was 3 to 4 months, but it doesn't matter. They don't know how to use phones. They don't.
He can prop up his phone on top of the piano and FaceTime while he's doing his thing.
Oh, God. So she skedaddles.
But if nothing else, there's a fair amount of, like, you know, he's trying to do right by her and stuff, but you see that he's still thoroughly embarrassed by basically everything he has done with his life, and he's finally witnessed the success from her dream chasing, and, you know, the purity of her, the way she's gone about it, and he's going to try and be more like her, but he doesn't really want to be watched or scrutinized while he does it. He needs to be on his own doing his thing while she's doing her thing, succeeding. So, yeah.
And this takes us to 5 years later, winter. She's on the Warner Brothers lot, shot from behind, exactly the way that the starlet was at the beginning of her story here. Only this time, she's the starlet and not the barista. And, oh no, I'm going to pay for it, I insist. And then she gets in the little golf cart thing and is driven away by her assistant.
Pay it forward, man.
Yeah, they have...
she got two coffees, too. Who's the other coffee for?
I don't know. She goes to the Chateau Marmont, where she is apparently staying in a villa or something. You're like, so why do they have a hotel if they live in LA? And then, sure enough, this is where you realize, oh, this isn't Ryan Gosling. This is another guy who she has a relationship with and a baby and stuff. So that's 5 years of success for Ryan Gosling there.
See, I was trying to, you know, they don't really get, I don't think they get to it. Do they live in New York or Paris or whatever? I don't think it's Paris. I think it's just somewhere else.
They mentioned seeing whatever it was they were going to go see when they get back to New York. So I'm assuming that they live in New York.
Right. Yeah. Because there was the whole like, oh, I don't miss this traffic thing when they're on their way to dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, yeah, why don't we just pull off here and get off the freeway and
have dinner.
Go get something to eat. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they get off, they have dinner, and then they walk past a jazz club, that's got some music, and the husband.
It was spontaneous and it was destiny and it drew them that direction.
Well, it drew the husband in that direction.
Well, wasn't it her idea to get off the freeway?
Yeah. See, the other story that you don't see here is that he's enamored with Ryan Gosling from this point on. That's the sequel to this film.
This is Ryan Gosling and Tom Everett Scott starting in the sequel.
Yeah, exactly. She got her Oscar.
I like
she's good.
He's a producer. Yeah, he's a producer or something, isn't he? So it's like maybe the next thing he does is a story about this.
Story about a jazz club.
Musician. Yeah.
So they go down, there's the arrow, and they arrive at the bottom, and she's struck by the sign, which is the thing that she had doodled for him, that he said he didn't want to do, because he wanted to do chicken on a stick.
Chicken on a stick.
Yeah, but it's Sebs with the musical notes for the apostrophe, which he had derided earlier.
I don't think he derided the musical. I mean, he just made like is that a musical note? I was like, that's interesting. It's kind of clever, I guess.
Well, I'm going to put that in the derision category, but I guess you could call it a wry comment. The other thing that this brings up every time I think about it is Seb. The name Sebastian, I'm not sure what was going through the writer director film buys head on that one, but Sebastian not good. And then Seb, it's just, come on.
Maybe he's a fan of Cruel Intentions.
Maybe, I guess. I suppose it fits his old-fashioned vintage vibe. So they go to Seb's, and she's
Sebastian's his middle name, but he just goes by that.
She's struck by the sign and then the stool with the spotlight on it, and then they go. She wanders over slowly to where her husband is, and he has a drink for her, and found two seats that are right next to one another in a packed house close to the front.
He's a very high-powered Hollywood New York producer, so he can do that sort of thing.
He didn't do anything. He just literally found two seats that were open.
He probably found somebody who said like, "Hey, my wife is Emma Stone. She's a very famous actress. You know who she is. You should find two seats for us." And they kick somebody out.
Oh, sure. So they sat down, and they hear the band playing, and you look at the guy on the piano, and you're like, "Oh, thank God, it's not Sebastian. That would be so awkward." And then Sebastian comes out on stage to thank the band and cites all the people who are playing in the band and. Like, oh, the guy on the piano, he's going to, you know, take over this place one day, LOL. And then he locks eyes with Emma Stone. And then he's like, uh-oh, because he doesn't say anything for a very long time. And then he goes over and he sits for a very, very, very pregnant pause of just sitting at a piano. And then he starts playing the City Stars stuff. And
no, it was the other song. It was their theme song that he played at the bar where he got fired by J.K. Simmons.
Yeah,
it's their theme.
So he plays that, that magically transports them through time back to when they first met at that diner. Only this time, he doesn't shoulder check her. They smooch, and then they move through life through the course of events that have transpired through the film in a singularly positive direction.
Dance number, lots of happiness.
Yeah, everybody's happy. Everything's coming up roses. It's amazing. No mistakes are made, and then they finally get to the point where she accepts the position, which is immediately offered to her instead of wait a couple days for the role of the starlet that will go film this thing. They go to Paris together. They come back. They have weird home movies because she's pregnant, and then has a small boy kid thing with blonde curly hair, which is different from her daughter that she has in her real life. And then this is the life that you could have lived if things had gone differently. And all of this expands in a single moment of playing this song. And when he finishes, it's all wrapped up. All of the stars, all the dancing, all the scenery, all the everything is just, it wraps it all back up on a few piano keys and it's done. they're transported back to where they were at the start of it. And she's lived an entire life somewhere else in the stars. So he's like, you want to leave? And she's like, yep. And so they turn around and they leave. But she lingers for 1 second. And there's a blue light on the front and a purple light on the back. And she spins around and she looks at him again. And they lock eyes and then she leaves. And he's sad. And he goes back to stuff. The end.
Mm. Reality is not as happy as the fantasy. But, you know, they both ended up in positive places at the end. But I really like the, aside from just the fact that it's a fun, long musical number thing, I really liked the, he's, you know, him performing the what could have been for her. And basically, it's his, in my eyes, it's sort of his formative apology of sort of like, yeah, I wish I could have got on the same page sooner. Look what could have happened if I was just as committed to my dreams as you are of yours. And we could have grown together. But instead, I was a jerk and you know, I ruined our chances to have this thing, but I've been thinking about it clearly this whole time, and I've got all of this stored up. And he turned his pain into his performance, and eventually put on, you know, achieved his dreams and acted like an adult and succeeded in creating the thing he always wanted. And now he's happy, but he'll never be as happy as he could have been if he would have been doing it with her the whole time.
Yeah. Ta-da.
I liked it. I liked the ending.
Yeah, and we had briefly discussed this before the podcast when you had asked me about the ending directly. It was like the first question you asked me. Mm-hmm. And I had said I didn't like the ending. And I want to clarify that. I like the musical number. I like the exploring a life that could have been lived in a single moment. I really enjoy all of that because it doesn't change the fact that things didn't work out between them. But it shows us this other side of regret and this bittersweet moment. So I enjoy it, but I felt like the actual end was kind of abrupt because it's just like, oh, well, we got other kids now. Peace. I got my bar. It's like, okay.
You wanted to like run out to the car and be like, here's my number. We should stay in touch. Let's get coffee sometime.
I don't know. I mean, I guess it counts as closure in a way because they had this life that they lived, but it doesn't feel... I wish there had been something in the concrete reality segment of this film that had expressed to one another like their resolution and moving on. And I would have also had liked it if we saw something about him moving on more than just his dream of opening this place. We see nothing of his inner life beyond this business. Because when he is at home before he goes to work, in his brown suit, he's frying chicken, and that's what he's doing. He's got a Smeg fridge, so things are going smegging well for him, I guess. But it doesn't seem like he has completed his love life in any particular way.
Well, that's again, this is all
leading to the sequel.
No, it's all Hollywood Mystique stuff, right? So, like, he
why are you trying to take my sequel away from me?
I'm not trying to take your sequel away from me. I'm sure somebody will do something with him as a musical. But, you know, he achieved the thing that he said he always wanted to achieve. But in doing so, he also may have realized that he wished he would have done things differently. Because, of course, you have to have regret, even in the face of success. But, of course, you know, like, you know, they've got... She knows that he was sort of like proud that she got her gig and said, you got to go do it. You got to focus on that. And now he, you know, kind of from that look back and moment they had, he knows that she's kind of proud that he did his thing. But he's still probably embarrassed that, you know, it's his fault that they are where they are and there's nothing to be done about that. But, you know, he got what he thought he wanted. And in the meantime, he lost something else that he realizes he should have hung on to. But, you know, what are you going to do?
Yep.
It's romance and heartbreak and all that stuff and art and things. Follow your dreams, Joe.
Nope.
But along the way, don't forget about love and stuff.
Be pragmatic and even keeled.
Be John Legend. Mm. Be rich and have
married
no
to Chrissy
Teigen aspirations. Yeah, she's entertaining.
I like her Twitter account.
We have one of her books, I think.
Oh. The cookbook or the...
The cookbook, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Food is important.
Yes. Everyone can agree food is important.
We can all agree on food. Anyway, it's a fun movie. The soundtrack will be useful for you for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. As soon as we finish listening to this, as soon as I finish listening to you talk,
shut up already, so I can start listening to the soundtrack again.
I just want to go back to another day of sun. Dan, you're distracting me.
The sun has set, and I apologize.
Yeah, I missed sunset. It was at 5:50. I looked it up beforehand. I had to go take a picture of the freeway when the sun was still out. Don't ask. Well, it's for reasons.
Okay. You had to take a picture?
Yeah, I'm going to put La La Land over it.
Well, it's dark in here, and I forgot to turn the light on my office, so it's just me sitting in a dark office with my window open, so anybody walking by can see my face.
Oh, yeah. I'm sitting in the darkened dining room area of Jason's apartment, and I just have the Desert Swarm beer still left, it's dark.
At least we can bask in the warm glow of the love and joy that came from this movie.
Yes.
The glow that is resonating off of 6 Oscars.
What was that? Is that the final tally?
I believe it was. Yeah, you had production design. You had the 2 songs. You had Emma Watson, Emma Stone. You had best directing, which I don't know. We'll move past that. And there was another one. Hang on, where was it? Awards. What was the other one? Oh, cinematography, of course.
Yeah.
How could we forget the amazing cinematography that was out of focus?
Yeah. Focus, Dan. Now, not having seen all of the other nominees for all of these other categories, I'm still fine with the music ones. I still think that's a good call. As I said, I really like it. And I do like it more than Moana, so sorry, Hamilton fans. You're just going to have to wait for the Hamilton movie to come out.
Joe's just a dreamer. he loves the songs about the Hollywood and the love and things.
No, see, and that's another thing about the narrative surrounding the awards this season was like, oh, Hollywood will pick it because it's a song about Hollywood and Hollywood loves itself. Narcissist. And it's like, of course. I mean, it's just an LA movie. And a lot of people have Hollywood dreams that aren't in LA. I mean, I don't know what to tell you about that one. Like, why do you think people move here? Do you think they move here because they're like, I don't know.
This is a very pragmatic life decision. I'm going to move to Los Angeles to be a famous actor.
You know, I was thinking about buying a house, but I decided I don't want to ever own property. So I'll just go move to Los Angeles.
You know what sounds fun? Not being able to know on a regular basis whether or not I'll be able to afford food.
But you can go to the food truck, Stan. First Fridays. Anyway, so... yes.
Hang on. Is there free food at food trucks?
No, of course not, Dan.
Well, then that's... Just going to go stare at the food trucks with no money because
longingly.
I don't have...
Yeah. Make new friends. You never know when you meet a casting director in line at a food truck.
Make new friends. Hey there, are you a casting director? Oh, great, great. You can finish that?
Go up to... would-be starlets and be like, hey, I want to be your friend. I'm not creepy at all. Please give me your food. I think it'll go over really well. You can tell them about the buzz about you and your world-building experience, and you'll be very endearing.
Let's imagine for a moment that this meatball sub represents the world of the film. Now, this meatball here is our character. Now, in the first act, he dies, takes a bite out of the meatball sub, sets it back down. This is how I'm going to trick my way into being able to afford food while also having high-powered Hollywood meetings.
Dan's meatball sub plan.
Yes, I have a 3-point meatball sub plan. Any fewer than 3 meatballs in a sub, it's not even a meatball sub.
No. That's not even a meatball sandwich. Like, you have to have 3, bare minimum.
Yeah, I prefer 4, because when you do 3, then you're like cutting one of them in half, and inevitably, it's never directly in half, so you got a small chunk and then a big chunk, and the smaller one always falls out when you try to pick that side up.
Or it crumbles. That's even worse. You ever had a crumbly meatball?
Not really.
Yeah, well, I guess most commercially available meatballs are of the eraser variety, where
a brand, or is it just, it looks like an eraser?
I just mean that it has the consistency of cutting through an eraser. Like, it's... They are firm, and hold together pretty well. Now, if you make a tender 11 meatball from your homemade recipe, it should not necessarily hold together like a softball that you've cut in half. So it's a pro tip.
It's been a while since I made meatballs. I wrote down the recipe for my grandma.
She makes good meatballs. I have the recipe from my mom who got it from my grandma, but my mom's very upset that she can never get the meatballs to turn out the way that her mother's did. And then that's why she doesn't make them anymore. And then I don't make them because they're a pain in the butt. And I don't even remember if they come out like my mom's or like my grandmom's, but I like them. They come out pretty good. I do them my way.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people forget the panade.
Do it your way. Follow your dream.
People forget the panade, which is the bread and the milk. I was making them with Jason. He's like, oh, we're buying breadcrumbs anyways. We can just use breadcrumbs. And it's like, nope. You gotta use the bread. You gotta do the recipe. It's like, why? Mm-hmm. It's like, for the texture, you just got to do it. And it'll do the moisture thing. And he's like, but it's bread. It's just bread. It's different sizes of bread. And I'm just like, nope. Just got to buy the bread. Just do it. Just do it, and we'll make the meatballs.
You gotta be true to yourself and follow your meatball dream.
Yes.
And then you will succeed in having meatballs.
Yeah.
For your sandwich.
Another meatball of subs.
Another day of meatballs?
Yes.
I'd be good with another day of meatballs.
Yeah, who wouldn't? I mean, vegetarians, likely, but other than...
I'm sure they have meatless meatballs somewhere.
They do.
Chickpeas or something? What do they use for those?
No, I mean, if you had chickpeas, it'd be falafel.
Hmm.
It's probably some mixture of vital wheat gluten and tofu.
Oh, great. That sounds delicious.
You're at vital wheat gluten...
Anyway, we should probably wrap this up.
Uh-huh.
Wheat gluten, what are you trying to do to me? It's a good movie.
Yes.
No, we're done. I was doing the drums for you.
Oh, thank you.